Syncopation, bull mastiff, and throwing lunch meat at the guys in the drunk tank. You know that's right. It's episode 4, season 6 of this podcast, End of Psych, and it starts right about, where's the open? Oh my god, did I delete the open? No, we're good. And it starts right about, now.
I've heard it both ways.
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 And welcome back to I've Heard It Both Ways. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, riding shotgun in the blueberry with me, as always, is the tap dancing, sand throwing, hamstring popping, woo, board grass playing, river dancing, lunch meat throwing, son of a gun. He's having a hard time keeping those alligators down. Billy, my man, how's it going?
Hello. It's going well. We're back. We took about a month off, maybe a little bit more. Travel, bachelor parties, hanging dong. It's been quite the ride.
Yeah, it has. You know what, Billy? We didn't skip a beat. That was as flawless a start as it might be the best start we've ever had on this program. there was some dong hung this weekend, that's for sure. But that is neither here nor there, William. We are here to talk this week, not about Hanging Dog, but to talk about Psych Season 6, Episode 4, The Amazing Psych Man and Tap Man, Issue Number 2. And I got to tell you, meh.
Yeah, I mean, It's not terrible. I did enjoy the watches of it, but it's certainly not what we know Psych for, what we love Psych for. There were some classic jokes. In the sense that they were of the psych tropey jokes. But when this episode, you know, comes on, there's nothing I'm really super looking forward to save for the new kid on the block.
Right. And so this episode, for two reasons, should be right up my alley. And I remember seeing the commercials for this episode and having such high expectations for it. And I remember watching it, you know, when it came out, being meh. Mm-hmm. And upon several rewatches, it's still meh. There is a lot to like about it, but it's just the potential was there and they missed something. The special guest star, the new kid, if you will, I think was fine. You know,
he's pretty funny. He's not a good actor, but he's funny.
Yeah, but I was thinking about that, and I'm like, is he funny, or is the joke, is this the running gag about his terrible tattoo in the show? Is that the real star?
Handed yourself in a dark alley with a bunch of dudes. Like,
It was good, but we get ahead of ourselves. But like, this, I just remember like being like super pumped for this episode because I was like, oh, if there's ever going to be a psych episode, it's going to be about
comic books. And, you know, you have one of the prominent comic book podcasts in the world. So
the preeminent comic book podcast in the world, if I may say so myself.
Yeah, you guys are getting mentioned on the cover of friggin' comic books.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking wild. that one took me by surprise. But before we really dive into our quick thoughts, Billy, quick synopsis. Mm-hmm. The Mantis, a masked vigilante, competes with SPPD to capture the casino syndicate. So Psych is called in to capture the Mantis. If only they could see further into the future than he apparently does. That's a clunky synopsis.
Yeah, not great.
Not great. They've been real tight lately. That was that was clunky as shit. So
kind of like the episode.
Yeah, you know, that's a good way of describing the episode. It was clunky. It wasn't really cohesive. And there was a few things about this episode that stuck out to me, you know, in the not so great Bob category. Mm-hmm. And one of it was I felt like some of the characters that we know and love were out of character a little bit, specifically Juliet. I thought that her obsession with the vigilante seemed a little out of character for her.
I don't know if it was quite the obsession. I did think they were just kind of doing it to play on the, we got the cutest interruption in the history of shows. Swaggins is here. Oh man, her hair is long.
Drill log, quick, Kid, real quick, what shirt are you wearing? Can we? Oh, come on. Super hot fire.
I think that's one of the few times we've heard her on the podcast.
Yeah, it is. Oh, thanks, kid. I love you. Oh, did you bump yourself? Oh, okay.
Uh-oh. Yep, well, Joe's, I think, single dadding right now, or solo dadding, so I think he's going to take care of the baby. Not a baby. She's a full-grown child. Well, I'll go into a little bit more here as Joe plays dad. So I forget exactly where we left off, but it is a comic book episode. They do some nice things here. They have the intro, which is comic book heavy. But the thing that I really was disappointed about in this episode when I first saw it is the fact that it's a comic book episode, but they didn't shell out the money to actually get somebody to cartoon the show. The intro is just video stills that are like posterized in post. They're not actually drawn. And I thought maybe USA was like, we're not given the money to Sight to do this. But in that case, I really didn't like the execution of the intro. I like the idea of it, but I really think if you do it, you got to do the actual drawing.
Yeah, I'd agree on that. I still kind of liked it. And I think what I liked about it more than the actual art of it was they changed the music. They gave it that like superhero, you know, comic book movie kind of music, which I liked. But I did kind of like, you know, I think a bit more than you liked how they did that intro. I thought that was a little it was fitting for the episode, but they could have done a little bit better because I think I can do those pictures on my phone. Some silly filter, right?
It's literally just a filter. For the first little behind the curtain here, it is so hot in my attic. I thought I could make it without the air conditioner. I'll take it out in post, but I had to put it on. I was sweating.
You gotta do it, Billy. Lately, so,
like it was. Yeah, ridiculous.
You gotta get that refrigerated air going. But you know, I thought overall the episode, it was a fun concept. Right. As I said a few moments ago, it was just missing something. It was a little clunky. I thought some of the characters, especially Juliet's character, was a bit clunky. Maybe to me, it felt like this obsession, at least early on, with the mantis. And I get it because they were trying to just really sort of heighten the mantis versus Sean. So create some sort of jealousy thing there. But that didn't really hit for me because we're too far along now.
It does feel odd and out of place. And yeah. I agree with that point. I think it was just simply a plot device to kind of add a little bit of tension to the story. But I'm 100% with you in the fact that I didn't care for it. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, some of the comic book show movie tropes that they incorporate in the episode I thought were fun.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really, really did not like Sean's superhero alter ego.
Oh, the catch is terrible.
Yeah, it's brutal. At least Tatman is like funny. Hilarious. Like that's Gus. But the catch, especially because Sean gets his ass kicked by this guy the entire episode, and all of a sudden he throws on some catcher's gear, and all of a sudden he's he's fucking Superman, like, and it was just dumb. They could have been also so much more creative than that.
Peak, as your wife would say, Fat Sean.
Yes, he's at his husky prime here.
Yes, 100%. This is the biggest Sean is probably going to be. I think in the Tao of Gus, you can actually see the Spanx he wears when he gets kicked through a table. And hey, I'm not hating. I'm a little heavier than I usually am myself right now, mainly because of the bloating. But that's another story for another podcast. But I do agree. Like for a show that's always so creative and a show that you know probably within the ranks of Sean, Gus, Steve Franks, all the people on the team, somebody's got to love comic books there too. Or at least, you know, some sort of superhero movie, whatever, to come up with the catch.
Yeah,
I agree. That was
a miss. Yeah, very lame. They could. There's more creativity on that on that production, on that cast and crew than the catch. But a positive thing I'll say before we really dive into things here is I thought the final twist was excellent.
Yes,
that was one of the real high points of the episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really well done. It was a good bait and switch, if you will. So with that, Billy, let's give we got off to such a hot start, and we forgot the process.
Well, do I have to tell the people, or should I let Sean do it? We'll let Sean do it.
Usually starts with a holla and ends with a creamsicle. And then if there's time in between, Thundercats. Ho!
Oh! Oh! So the director of this episode is Mel Damsky, and he's directed 23 episodes. We've mentioned his name before. We're not going to go over all 23. He's a solid average. He's in that meaty part of the curve. If you psych episodes. And the writer is Steve Franks and Saladin K. Patterson. Not someone whose name I think we've mentioned all that much. Why don't you tell people, the Billy, who the standout guest star is? This one is surprising.
It's Joey McIntyre of New Kids on the Block, who I didn't know. I knew it was somebody, but I'll tell you what, he aged unbelievable. He looks like he's 25.
The best out of all of them.
Yeah, he looks amazing. I don't know what he looks like now, because this was probably like over 15 years ago, probably at this point.
Jesus.
Like it's an older episode, not an older episode, season 6. So maybe I'll figure it out. I'll take a look.
2008? But either way,
right? 2008-ish. Yeah. Either way, he looks fantastic. And I thought he was exactly perfect for what he needed to do. He just kind of played a cop who was handsome and in shape, and a 1B for the Mantis. I hate the guy who plays the Mantis. Real DB face. Real, want to punch him right in the mush. That like annoyingly handsome guy that dresses like a preppy guy, super in shape. You know, gotta say, like it's a jealousy thing. Like he's got it going on, man.
Some people just have punchable faces.
He certainly does,
and he's got one of them. What I will say though is that like they casted that perfect like Clark Kent looking motherfucker,
yes,
right?
Exactly. You know right? what? That is spot on. He is a Clark Kent. And by the way, it was 2011. So
2011. Jeez, we
but
both
12 years ago. Even still, like I wonder what Joey Max looking like currently.
Yeah, Billy's on RedTube at the moment. But yeah, no, Joey Mack, you know, age well, and I think at the time too, he was doing a bit more acting. So it made sense, you know, you're getting out there. He was definitely a bit funnier than I give him credit for, but like he really wasn't in the episode a whole lot. And I thought the tattoo bit with him was the funniest aspect.
That's the funniest part of the episode for sure.
Yeah. Especially of his appearance, but they actually do a good job, because that's the thing. He was a perfect red herring, because your typical procedural, you get the guest star, you know, at least in psych history, the guest star is usually a contributing member of the psych team. But you know he's not going to be that here. So, you know, maybe it is him, right? And when it ends up, like, not even being close to him, and he's just there for fucking some psych gags.
Yeah. We do also...
There's a good red herring.
Yeah. And the dude who actually is the guy, the reporter, Clark Kent, perfect call. He name drops a nice callback. The guy who dubbed Lassie Detective Dipstick, Chad Gorsuch.
Yes, which we will get to that exchange momentarily because that was fucking hilarious. So we do get a flashback scene here, and it's young Sean and Gus, and they're on their way to a comic book convention. And man, is Gus a fucking nerd, and everyone knows it.
I love it. Henry gives him an ounce of credit to redeem himself, and he does not.
He absolutely.
But his character's great.
Yeah, Tapman. I mean, it makes sense. He has all the comic book tropes. But one of the best lines in the episode is when Gus introduces himself as Tapman. Sean goes, "How is it that you always make the wrong choice between cool and stupid?"
It's great.
Yeah, I feel like that line could be applied to me on a daily basis.
I'd give you more credit than that, but I do love what you wrote down here. Alter ego, mild manner dance instructor. Love it.
Yeah.
Arch nemesis. River dance, man.
What's your superpowers? Rhythm.
Rhythm. He confuses opponents with his quink, and I love this word, syncopation.
And it's such a Gus word. Absolutely fantastic. And one of the best things in this, one of the other things that always gave me a fucking laugh in this episode is whenever adult Gus tried to throw the sand in someone's face, and he would hit the exact wrong person. Mm-hmm. Like, you either hit Sean or Lassie or whoever.
Or he hit the guy in the chest.
Yeah. Just absolutely fucking hilarious. But it is the lamest but funniest fucking character they could come up with for Gus. And when we get into fucking Catchman or the Catch or whatever, like, oh, you fucking guys, you dropped the ball on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But the beginning scene of this episode, as I stutter, is great, because you got some great, like, action, you know, comic book, you know, superhero, you know, movie, you know, music to the action that, you know, Sean and Gus are running. You don't know who they're chasing. You don't, you know, what the hell is going on. But whenever these two engage in physical activity, Billy is always fucking hilarious.
Yeah. What was it? The Viagra Falls, where they're, dude, you can't immediately call me out for having a hamstring when you called me up for doing it. And then just Gus jumps 20 feet in the air. But right. They are chasing suspects. The mantis winds up actually having them. They are all wrapped up and ready to go. And the thing that I actually do really like here, before we get the reveal of the mantis standing up there like Batman, is Sean is using the...
yes.
What do they call those? Fuck.
The crime scene sketch artist.
The sketch artist. To draw himself a, like, beach caricature.
Yeah.
And I always love that they put him on the skateboard. He's jacked. And I love this line. You know, if you add a line there, it'll imply more motion.
Oh, yeah. I think if you add another wheel, it implies more motion, right? Whatever. It was fucking, yeah, that was great. But, you know, they're chasing them. They fucking knock each other over. They fall down. They're both hurt, pulled hammies. And I think the Sean goes, this is the last time I allow you to use your fast twitch muscles as an excuse for anything.
We know that's not the case.
And then the come on, son, between the two of them back and forth was actually hilarious. But yeah, like, they're chasing bad guys. By the time they recover from their injuries and get there, right, as you said, the bad guys are already roped up, you know, and then you get the ominous music, and Lassie's there, and he's trying to get the guys to tell him what the guy looked like. And Gus goes, let me guess, he's top, pop, pop, and he's wearing a black cape. And Lassie goes, how do you know that? And they look up, and that was just like that classic, like you said, Batman, mm-hmm. the animated series at the end of the opening credits, where he's just standing on top of the building like that. Very regal, very, very super.
That was one of the best shots in the episode. It's not known usually for its cinematography, but they nailed that shot.
Yeah, they blew the budget on that mm-hmm. one shot, that's for sure. We get back to the office, we're at the station. I don't know why I wrote office. But they're at the station, and this is where we get the exchange. So there's a vigilante on the loose. They're trying to figure out who is bringing in these crime syndicate, these drug, drug syndicate, you know, members. And so they're trying to, like, keep shit in house, because cops always hate, you know, vigilantes. And for the first time, or not the first time, because we saw it, you know, it was a callback to the shark episode, but one of the rare times we get a press pool, you know, mm-hmm. in front of everyone. This is where we get Lassie going, don't think I haven't forgotten about Detective Dipstick. Sir, that was Chad Gorsuch. He's now assignment in South America. And then Lassie just goes, at least he's being punished.
I think he said South Africa, which is actually not punishment, probably.
Maybe. But regardless, Lassie goes, at least he's being punished.
Yeah.
Was an absolutely great, great line. But we get the gaggle of reporters are there to cover both the drug bust.
Oh, it is America. And, you're right.
Yep. And so this is kind of setting up, you know, the idea. But again, like, they do a really good job at, like, at least when I first watched this, I should have thought it would have been one of the members of the press. But mm-hmm. as soon as you see Joey Mack, when he's introduced in a few moments, you're thinking, that's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guy. And again, that's where the writing of the show kind of saved it a little bit from itself, because the way the crime and the vigilante and everything was executed was probably its biggest strength.
Yeah, because I think the first time I watched it, I knew it wasn't going to be Joey Mack, but I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, oh, it's the Clark Kent, it's the news reporter. But the best swerve was, you're right, is the fact that the news reporter was actually a crook. Not a killer necessarily, but a criminal nonetheless.
Yeah, that twist when we get there at the end was absolutely fantastic. But what we also get here is, you know, Jules sort of talking about the Mantis, and she is fawning over him, and it makes Sean jealous, as you'd imagine. And I just thought, like, Jules is great, and it's not that her acting was bad. It's just like they wrote this little subplot, which ended up turning into nothing anyways. It, like, you didn't need it. It was unnecessary. It's not like Sean needed the competition. You know, he didn't need any extra motivation to want to catch a vigilante. It's well within his character's profile to want to be like you see with Despero. Like, he gets kind of like doe-eyed and obsessed with these kind of characters. So that I feel like that would have been a sort of a better angle to pursue than, like,
yeah, but he's stepping on Sean's turf directly. Despero was a criminal he admires.
True. And even with Declan Rand, right? It's almost a similar thing, you know, right? Declan Rand might be the better comparison, right? When Declan Rand was on his turn, right? So, like, we've seen that Sean and, you know, and they played into that too because Jules was into Declan and they were dating. So, like, you don't need to go back to the well there with that.
Yeah,
we always
talk about Sean playing from behind. This is one of the few episodes he's playing from behind that I don't love.
Yeah. And so one of the things that Sean happens to notice was that each of these crime. So correct me if I'm wrong here. Right. So each one of these crime busts seem to line up with Gus's weirdo moon calendar,
the lunar calendar.
And Sean is able to use that to deduce when the next potential crime bust might be going down. Did this play a factor into the rest of the episode? This seemed like an odd clue to kind of have in there. I feel like they maybe could have used something else that maybe would have made a little bit more sense.
I think it just helped them find out that the next one was on like the 26th.
Yeah.
That was about it though.
Yeah. I feel like if you're going to like go out of your way to like make it be such a, maybe it should play a bigger role or be used. I don't know. It just seemed like an odd clue to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not having my typical fun and picking nits. But this was great because now Sean thinks he's got the upper hand here. He thinks he's figured out maybe they can beat the Mantis to the next bust, and they can maybe police department, you know, could save face a little bit. So as he predicted, they get there, but the dudes have already been busted by the Mantis. Sean gets the feeling that maybe the Mantis is someone on the inside.
Yeah. Which is a pretty accurate depiction of it, because literally he was on the inside of the police station when they were first there, the reporter, of course. But then this is one of my, it's not like one of my favorite things of the episode, but it's a nice little thing in the episode where they kind of go around the police station thinking of who it could be. And they have a couple of good reasonings. You know, Lassie would never solve crime anonymously.
Yeah, right.
When they look at Henry, it's not the 1970s. And then they see, Joey Mantis.
Joey McIntyre, which makes sense. He's a character we're not familiar with. 6 seasons in now, like, we know everyone in that department.
Transferred from Ventura PD,
right? So that makes sense, right? Like, all right, all of a sudden we have a vigilante here and a newly transferred cop. I don't know. So, like, they are planting the seeds. It is a little too easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at least it's a viable, and, you know, it's a viable, you know, I don't want to say suspect, but, like, you know, it's a viable candidate, you know, for, you know, the Mantis. You can't assume. I love this too, where Sean goes, you can't assume he's a brother because he's all mysterious and smooth.
Hilarious.
Great line.
And it contributes to Gus's always thinking everybody is, when he thought the Grimace was a brother.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things that I relate to in this episode is that they really, I don't know why they decided to do this here, but they really made Henry act like an old.
Yes,
like an
very
out of
much
place,
so.
Like, oh, and I loved it. I was there for every second of Henry acting like a fucking old Nat, because I found myself acting like that several times during Friar's bachelor party weekend. when they see the who's the new guy, the possible Mantis, this was one of the funnier bits, because you got Sean feeling the man's fitness level was great.
Oh my god.
You look like you handle yourself in an alley full of guys.
I bet you're real nice with the hand-to-hand action.
Yeah, right? Like, it was just like this very subtle sort of, like, homoerotic, you know, like, Sean, like, sizing this guy up, feeling his arms. Yeah. Yeah, the other guy's got no fucking clue what the hell he's doing. He's like, why the hell is this dude feeling me up? And I just, that was a really great little scene. That was some good psychness right there.
Indeed it was. And then we go to probably one of your least favorite parts of any episode ever, the restaurant with Sean and Jules, which we don't get a lot of this. We get this like a few times in the history of the show, Sean like out with the significant other. And it's basically just to kind of set up them being on opposite ends and set up the next thing that they have to go to. And to your point, probably doesn't sync up with the calendar, but maybe they're on the move because they know that they're being actually, you know, attacked now and they have to move their drugs quickly. So they, you know, get the call that, you know, something is happening. They go off in separate ways and Sean actually winds up at the pier first.
Yeah. And, but this fucking scene in general though, it was awkward.
And
like I said, it was out of character because again, these characters are established. You don't need to introduce at this point in the series that Sean and Jules may not see eye to eye on a case. It's happened before, right? But she goes out of her way to like make it awkward, and there's just this weird, palpable, like unneeded tension that doesn't. It essentially it inevitably goes nowhere because at the end they're all like, "Oh yeah, right." But there was this great where Sean goes, first off, Gus and I never see eye to eye on stuff, such as me using him as a human shield when we're being shot at. I, for one, think it's a very noble way for one to meet his maker. It's like I just fucking love that, you know, sort of like the hamburgers, you know, that's Sean and Gus. But, you know, Jules gets a call. She has to take off. What's Sean going to do?
He's going to be there.
He's eventually going to be there. They get there. The Mantis has struck again. Or has he?
Yeah, this, again, like, there's no actual thought to anybody who's watching it that thinks that Sean is the Mantis because we saw them in the same place at the same time, pretty much. Gus obviously knows it's not him. Everybody kind of knows it's not him. And even the whole Juliet kind of believing it for a second, even though she seems a little facetious, it's just like not good writing because is she being playful when she's like, oh, you know, Sean, da, 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 and then like they turn right around, and this is one of my favorite bits is the I know, you know, I'm not telling the truth. They do like the theme song, but it's just very clunky. It's not like strung together properly. She's seemingly actually believing that he might be the Mantis. Yeah. But then, like, a split second later, she's not even mad that he, like, potentially lied. There's, like, no way to spin that wasn't, like, that was just shitty writing.
Yeah, this was a puzzle piece that's being jammed into the puzzle that doesn't fit, right? Yeah. And it was clunky shit because what this scene needed was at least, prior to it, some conversation of Sean and Gus. Like, Sean's, like, proposing this idea. And Gus saying, no, that's a really dumb fucking idea. And then if we get it later on in the episode, like, okay, at least it was brought up. At least it's on Sean's thinking about it. But no, we kind of go from this really weird, awkward scene to the next thing we get an action scene with the Mantis. He's getting his ass kicked. And it turns out that it's Sean out of fucking nowhere. And then we're all just supposed to believe it. And then like the people.
Well, nobody in the audience, I think, is supposed to believe it. Right. We know there's no like dramatic. There's dramatic irony for maybe Juliet and Henry and possibly Lassie. But like Sean and Gus and we as the audience know that he's not the man.
True. True, true, true. But everyone else does. But, you know, so it was just I don't know. It was
biggest gripe and we can move on from this quickly. Yeah. The Juliet kind of believing it and then instantly finding out that it's not him and not even like batting an eye at it. Like,
yeah.
Eh.
Yeah. So we're back at the station. We find out that Sean was dressed as the Mantis because he was trying to catch him in the act. And when Gus goes, you went boneless, didn't you? Oh, I used my entire body as a weapon. Like,
again,
this
that's great, right?
Yeah, this is the stuff I love. This is the stuff that made me like. There were lots of things that made me chuckle. It was just too clunky. That's a chunky. It was just.
And that's a callback to the episode Ghosts when he's trying to drag Sean out of his office and Sean goes boneless on.
Don't go boneless on me, Sean. And we found out that the Mantis overtook Sean. They swapped clothes so that he could escape unnoticed. And then, you know, we're trying to find out, like, who's the Mantis? Is it the new guy, right? Is the Mantis padding his stats, right? Is
there the real Mantis jumped him like a sack of flour, took pictures of him in his underwear, and then dressed in his clothes?
That's right. So, you know, is the Mantis planting evidence? Like, what's going on? Sean's starting to think, okay, there's something not quite right with this guy.
He was maybe quick to the scene.
Yes, right. So what is going on? There's more to meets the eye to the Mantis. How is he able to, you know, get there all the time? And blah, blah, blah. It just seems too easy. And when things are too easy for Sean, that's always when his radar goes on. So flash forward to the next scene. They're on the rooftop for the next bust. They get there. They see Mantis standing over a dead guy. And now the stakes have changed because the Mantis has gone from vigilante to possible murderer.
I think we quickly skipped over a scene where he calls the police station, right?
Oh, right.
And then also, that's another lame Juliet. His voice is really deep, but Sean does the "I've heard deeper," which is kind of hilarious. But then, yes, they go to the rooftop, and on the rooftop, you find out that the Mantis may be a bad guy. But then again, it's back to that Declan thing where when they go to the psych office, Sean and Gus are having the convo. And while they're having the convo, Sean realizes he probably didn't kill that guy because when you shoot a guy in the back, typically he falls forward. So he was turning him over as he got there. So they kind of realize he's not a murderer, but we know he is a bad guy, but not necessarily, you know, he's just trying to steal the drug money. He's not like, and we're not even there yet, but he's right now still looking like a good guy.
Yeah. And this was great because they're in the office and you know, Sean's like, the Mantis, he's my nemesis. And you guys go, the Mantis isn't your nemesis, Sean. You don't have an alter ego, a cool suit, or a tragic origin story, which I thought was great. Because, like, Gus is very sneaky into this case without, like, being over the top about it. I know using the word giddy is facetious, but the truth is that I am tickled pink. That is another great Sean line. And then, like you said, you know, Sean started to think, well, yeah, maybe the man just really didn't kill that guy. And then all of a sudden, so this is one of the nice little things they sort of added to the Mantis's character. Like, because at this point, we look at the Mantis as a vigilante doing good because he's bringing down all these, you know, cartels and members of the cartel. But because he had stole Sean's clothes, he was kind enough to have them dry cleaned and returned to Sean. And we get a nice little fuck up here by the Mantis, who seems to always be, you know, that classic he's playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers kind of thing. We hear that all too often here in New England. He returned Sean's clothes freshly dry cleaned, but he left the dry cleaning ticket in the clothes. And this, I thought, was a great little bit of writing. So then this brings us to
Ticket. He left accidentally. He didn't realize that there was a stain inside or in a different spot that they left a little tag. Hey, couldn't get this out. Sorry about that.
Right.
That you wouldn't normally check for, but it then led them to the dry cleaners.
Turns out you can't get motor oil out by rubbing on more motor oil.
That's another one. Like that's a trope I see used in other things. One of my favorite things ever is from Community, where they spill Kool-Aid on something. You're like, what gets out Kool-Aid? We found out it's not the opposite color Kool-Aid.
I've never seen Community. That's a show I should probably watch.
It's great.
But so this leads us to one of the funnier scenes in the episode where they're at the dry cleaners. And so Sean's trying to pry some information out of the woman that's working there, but she won't budge unless they have clothes that she can dry clean. So this is one of the best, the two best gags, you know, in the episode. One of them is where Sean takes his thick ass fucking permanent marker and just rubs a streak right down Gus's shirt. The look on Gus's face when he does it is fucking hysterical. It's almost like the my humidifier is not a popcorn or coffee maker, right? And so she goes, "Oh, let me go see if I can get that out." So she rushes out back. Sean hops over the hops over the counter. Boom, 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 boom. He's able to find the ticket and get an address for the the Mantis's potential hideout. And so he hops back over the counter. When she's got the information, she comes back. She's sorry, couldn't get it out. And Sean just grabs what looks like a giant glue stick, rubs it on there, and goes, "See, it's working." It just fucking made it worse. I don't know what it was about that just little piece of physical comedy, but that made me chuckle something fierce.
It was great. And then we get to the Mantis's apartment, and I do love this because it's a good bit of physical comedy, which they do pretty well in a lot of their episodes, but especially here, they're trying to tell him that they know he was set up, but yeah, they can't get the words out. And when Gus keeps trying to say cousin, which I didn't know was a thing, is fucking hilarious. Because when he's like, "Not everybody knows what that means."
Yeah, right, right. And the best thing too is that Sean was, as he had mentioned earlier, using Gus as a human shield, which was absolutely great. But this is where we find out that it was the mild mannered reporter, right? This is a little callback or a little nod to Superman here. And so this was great. So, this is where we learn that. And again, there is some good writing buried in this episode. So they're kind of having this back and forth, and the Mantis is like, "Yeah, I keep busting these guys, but I don't know where they're stashing the drugs." And Sean kind of thinks about it, and he's like, "What do all these crime scenes have in common? Something about, I don't know if it's a window manufacturer or whatever it is." But as they're talking, they're like, "Yeah, maybe you could melt the cocaine down and hide it in the glass." And what's great about this is how it comes into play later on in the episode. So now we have an idea how the cartels are, possibly moving all this, all this cocaine, all that, that top-notch product. So we get back to the pier. The Mantis realizes, "I can't do this by myself. I'm going to need some help." And this is where we get the catch and tap, man. And while visually it kind of looks cool how they did this first in the shadows and then you get the reveal, the idea of catch, man, is just so fucking dumb. And I think that's one of the things of the catch. Sorry. It's one of the things that absolutely ruins this, that really lowers this episode down.
It does. But I see you have the homage to Batman 69, which is great. And I don't think it's like the 60s version. I think Batman 69 was the porno that Max Dad sent a goo.
Right, right. Well, 69 is, I think, when the TV show came out. That's where I wrote.
Oh, really?
69. Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was 60s, 70s. But either way, I do like the they didn't execute a lot of the editing well. Like the zap was cool. Like, the pow zap that you would see in the big letters. They did a couple of them really nice. One of them was super cheesy. But I guess that's kind of what they were going for anyways. But it was a nice nod to the superheroes. I never even picked up on the mild-mannered reporter until today.
Yeah, it was that was one of the things I noticed because it was I'm a Superman guy, right? I know. he had the glasses, the nicely coiffed black hair.
Perfect.
Right? It was all that. That was really well done. But Sean is in this moment because now the Mantis has still been, a suspect for the murder. Sean's like, "No, he's innocent." And tries to prove his innocence and does. So they get back to the station, but they're still wondering where is all the drug money? They had this big bust, right? They got a lot of the big guys there, and but the money was gone. They had no idea where the drug money went. So this was a nice little callback to the Mantis bringing Sean's dry cleaning back. Sean decides to bring the Mantis's dry cleaning back. As they show up to the apartment, Billy, it'd be empty.
Yeah, he's on the lam, probably an alpaca. That'll be faster. But either way, Sean kind of figures out what he was been up to the whole time, where he's actually following the Caminos and following the money to get the money, because that's really what he's interested in. Because as we know, mild-mannered reporters don't really make a whole lot of money. So he's in it for the cash. and Sean catches up to him, and he is emptying out the Camino's money, which is apparently a shitload.
Yeah, and I love this line from Sean when he finally confronts, you know, the Mantis. He says, this was never about honor or justice or presidential fitness. Right? Which is great. I remember doing those presidential fitness
things. I never did.
Really?
I think it might have been phased out right after you.
No, yeah, I might have been. I was the test case class for MCAS, so I had to take the MCAS, but they didn't matter.
And as soon I was as the first one that it mattered.
So when they told us, they said, "Yeah, you guys have to take these tests, but it doesn't. It's not going to affect anything." You know what I did for every single answer?
C's
right down the fucking dick, baby. You know, I wasn't studying for it. I didn't. Nope. I'm going to sit there and bang, 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 knock those puppies out. I also love
the mention of presidential fitness in the spy psych versus psych episode.
Yes.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah. Because, you know, all those guys had to sit through it and do their fucking jumping jacks and toe touches. And I remember distinctly having to do the reach where you sit down. And like it had the ruler essentially going from your crotch straight out, and you had to lean forward, see how far you could reach, like beyond your toes. Yeah. Short arms never did well on that one. but there, this was 100% like the best. This was one of the better reveals, period. I thought this was well done. You know, as we mentioned, it was the mild mannered reporter. He was just out there for some vigilante justice of his own. But it was all about the Benjamins, baby. Like, that was it. I thought that was great. The way that they pulled that off. And the way, I can't remember the actor's name, but I actually thought he did a really good job of that duality of character. And when he had to make that switch from mild-mannered reporter / good guy vigilante to all of a sudden, yeah, I'm a fucking prick. I just want the fucking money. I don't know. I thought he pulled that off really well.
Yeah, I'm looking up his IMDb. I figured he would have been in a lot more stuff. He stopped acting in 2019, and his biggest credit is one episode of Mad Men.
I mean, he's a handsome-looking fellow. You'd think he'd get more work.
He didn't seem like a bad actor either.
No, he seemed like he had it all. So, like, I thought that was really good. And then, kind of a callback. This is, you know, the end scene. This is some of these end scenes have become some of my favorite parts of the episode because they've really been nailing it lately. Was a callback to the cleaners where Sean had put the mark on Gus's shirt. Mm-hmm. So Sean's like, I tried to fix your shirt for you. And he throws it to him, and the shirt shrunk. And Gus is fucking pissed because he spent how much money he spent on that shirt? A couple $100. Yeah. And Sean's like, why would you do that? And so to get exact his revenge, Gus like inadvertently rips one of the sleeves off Sean's shirt. And then he rips the other one off. And just the back and forth, that whole thing between those two, like that's like such classic Sean and Gus. Yeah, I thought that was absolutely fantastic. But the way he threw him that tiny shirt, again, that was some great physical comedy.
It was. And now we're into the...
I keep tonight.
You're red hot.
The Thundercats, oh, and you like the comic book intro, but this kind of goes the next one into that last scene where Joey Mack talking about how he'd love to set up Sean with his friend. Because Joey, I think he just rubbed you the wrong way. But one of the most memorable moments is the interaction outside of the police station with Joey Mack and Sean when he actually confronts him about possibly being the Mantis and reveals his tattoo.
Yeah, I mean, this was so good because this was Sean thinking one thing. This was Joey Mack thinking, you know, something completely different. and the interaction between the two was great because Sean's confronting him thinking he's the Mantis. And Joey Mack's thinking, oh, like, I've got the perfect dude to set you up with. And that was fucking hysterical. But then Sean looks down. He sees this tattoo, this gaudy tattoo on his arm. And it really does look like a bull mastiff.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, that's my grandmother. And John goes, oh, I'm sorry, like, you know, condolences, just she's not dead.
No, he goes, I'm sure she's stopping traffic in heaven.
Oh yeah, she's not dead.
His delivery of she's not dead is pretty good too.
But the look on Sean's face as he's saying she's not dead was like, that was legit, like, no, you're fucking me, right? Like,
yeah.
No. Why would you have a bull massive tattoo? That was fucking great. And then we get a call back to Jules sort of saying, yeah, you know, he's a little thing, but he's like, but he thought my Nana was a dog, and she looks at it and pauses. He's, it's not a dog, or whatever the hell he says. Like, it was, that was fucking great. Gus, like I said earlier, Gus throwing sand at everyone and everything.
That was the other thing too that I'm gonna go to least favorable moment real quick. When he throws sand in Lassie's eye and the mantis gets away, why isn't Lassie fucking rip shit pissed? He's just like, Guster, that you? Like, he should be, like, he would be pissed.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I almost feel like in that moment, Lassie should have pulled his gun on Gus.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a Lassie reaction. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. I didn't think about that.
He just shakes it off like, Guster, they just let a potential killer get away.
Yeah. And he got sand in his eye. Like, it's the last thing. Like, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
He's Mr. Miyagi, everybody. Who was Yokozuna's?
Mr. Fuji.
Mr. Fuji and everybody.
Yeah. R.I.P. R.I.P. Yeah. Both Yokozuna and Mr. Fuji. And then the fight scene at the end. You know, I thought like that was pretty good. It was. I like the idea of it. I thought the choreography of it was pretty good. It was very super, you know, superhero-y, comic booky, but I still just can't get over like, okay, a catcher's mitt, you know, shin guards. Like, there were some funny elements to it, but like, it was also kind of lame at the same time. I should have had this in both, you know, most memorable and least memorable scenes. Yeah. How about you? Anything else to add there, William?
No, I mean, the stuff with Joey Mack, I said a bunch.
Yeah, that was, that, the laundromat scene, you know, a couple one-liners, you know, in through there. But, like, we were kind of pulling at straws to get some of these here. But for me, hands down, the least memorable moment was that restaurant scene. Just not my favorite. Favorite character, William, who you got?
Same as you. It's Gus. Yeah. Gus was great in this episode, I thought.
Yeah, sneaky great. This is an episode that would scream Sean, you know, and it should have, you know, screamed Sean a little bit more. But Gus was absolutely hysterical. His one-liners were delivered, you know, because sometimes like, in these episodes, Gus will, like, when he's all in, he'll kind of be over the top, and he's funny for much different reasons. Mm. But his one-liners were delivered, like, just so perfectly. And they weren't over the top. And again, him throwing sand at everything and, you know, really buying into that tap man persona, I thought was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he nailed everything that he did in this episode. Again, you know, not their strongest episode. Well, our scores will show that. But Gus was pretty good Gus, and the tap man stuff was hilarious.
Yeah. Let's get to some quotes here. Add another wheel, it adds to the motion. this was a great Lassie line. In the beginning, when talking about the vigilante, where Lassie goes, and I'd also be lying if I said that I wish I could operate outside the badge and dish out some good old-fashioned street justice of my own. That was just such a Lassie line, you know, to deliver.
I've solved more crimes than I can count, and that's not because I can't count, because I've solved a lot of crimes.
I love that line. That was a moment where Sean, like, yeah, I'm a bit of an adult, but actually I have actually done a lot of really good work here. Like, that was him sort of like buying into the character a little bit there. What do we do next? First, we have to go throw deli meat to guys in the drunk tank.
Love it.
Random, just the best. you pinched and bit a man. And then we did the motor oil bit, right? Especially motor oil, which I tried. So let's get to the last part, Billy. Let's podcast home.
Muffins.
So this is a rare instance, Billy, where I saw both pineapple references.
Ooh. Yeah, I saw it in the comic book. I noticed that one.
Yep. So this was, and I think that was part of the comic book open that I liked, is that when they did the thing, it actually looked like a comic book cover. They had the little strip down the side where it had the logo and all that stuff, but they had the pineapple there, which was great. But when they were at the restaurant, the scene that I detest so much, they actually had a pineapple salt shaker on the table. And I actually did catch that one. Not a ton of
good nicknames. Watson Williams, Benedict Arnold Jackson.
The Benedict Arnold Jackson was absolutely fantastic. There was an I'd rather. This was a great. This is one of the things when I first watched the episode, I texted you. so this probably would have been about 5 weeks ago. When it was last year saying, I'd rather spend the rest of my life at Lilith Fair.
It's a good one.
Perfect Lassie line. If that's an encapsulation of who Lassie is, it's that quote right there. And then like Henry wasn't in this episode a ton, but usually when Sean is asking you to get on a case, there's some back and forth between Henry, but Henry was just like,
yep.
They go, Dad, can we? Goes, yes. That to me was the quintessential dad where your kid is just like badgering you, you go, like, yes, fine. You can watch another fucking YouTube video. I don't care. Just leave me alone for 5 minutes. So that was great. And then I need to know more than anything who the Phineas and Ferb fan is on this show, because that's now the third Phineas and Ferb reference we've had.
I would guess Steve Franks, or because he's probably a father, and I know that's a show your kid would watch.
Yep. It's fantastic. I love it. I'm here for all the Phineas and Ferb. We get a Charles Bronson reference, Batman, obviously, Iron Man, Mr. T. We get a sweet Mork and Mindy reference.
Battle of the Network Stars, I liked.
Yeah, and that was actually from Jules, right? Mm-hmm. That was something that she cracked in the restaurant scene. A nice Different Strokes reference.
to one of the creepiest episodes in television history.
Right. And that brings us, William, to our pineapple rating. We rate each episode out of 8 pineapples. If you're tardy to the Pineapple Boys party, that's how we do things over here. Shout out Mac and Goo. So how many pineapples, William, did you give this episode?
I'm going to go straight 5.
Straight 5. Wow, you dropped it. 7/10 of a point.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, we've, you know, belabored the episode now for 52 minutes like we usually do it at this point. But it's not unenjoyable. It's just not of the level you come to expect when you watch a psych episode.
Yeah, especially at this point in the series.
That being said, it's going to be Jake's favorite episode.
100%. 100%. This should have been one of my favorite episodes, given the nature of the theme of the show. I'm not going to quite drop my initial score down 7/10 of a point. I'm going to drop it 5/10 of a point. I'm going to go 5.5.
Yeah. I mean, we typically re-rank as we get to it, but, you know, there is stuff on the horizon. I know we'd get to it in the Come On, Son, but just quickly, Dead Man's Curveball is pretty good. That's next.
Better than this, for sure.
Sean Interrupted is fantastic.
Tremendous.
In for a penny. Oh, my God. And is it Frank or Hank or whoever it is? She's hot. In for a Penny is pretty good. It's okay. Yeah. That one, I think, was like meh when I watched it the first time. In the Tale of Gus is pretty good. Neil Simon's Lover's Retreat is one of my all-time favorite episodes. That one is phenomenal. The Despero episode is okay. Here Comes Lassie's a very good one. Shaun of the Real Girl, I don't watch often enough, but I like it. Let's Do Up Again.
I think the Miz is in that episode.
He is in that episode.
Yes. Yep.
Let's Do Up Again. Meh. But then we get Autopsy Turvy.
Which.
Whipped cream, was it?
If it wasn't for Last Night Gus, that would be up for episode of the season. Right,
it might be my episode of the season because I fucking lie. I watch that episode on like when I travel, like to kill time. That's one of my favorite things to watch because it's just it's hysterical.
I've literally this is no lie. I've literally used fruit and dried fruit is not a snack at least a dozen times this month.
Good for you.
All the time. I work that in every moment. I went grocery shopping. We did a little grocery shop for the bachelor party, and I was with we were picking up some extra items and. I was with Friar's cousin. He goes, oh, can we get some bananas or something? I go, fruit and dried fruit are not snacks. Boom, nailed it. I say it at the office. I mean, it's a great fat guy joke. It really is. Right? French Stewart is so fucking good in that episode. Also, Sneaky Hot is the palm reader, the tarot card reader.
Mm-hmm. I followed her on Instagram for a bit.
That's my man. That's my man. So, Billy. Come on, son.
Get that body of that bull. Come on, son.
What do we have coming up next week, my friend?
Next week, we have Dead Man's Curveball. We get, you know, what's his name? Danny Glover.
Danny Glover, great cameo. Does a great job.
Who we love very much. And then, is it Danny Glover? It's Danny Glover, right?
It's Danny Glover, baby. Yep.
Okay. He was also in an episode of Criminal Minds playing Morgan's dad, which I thought was really weird because Morgan's dad died as a young man, but they cast an old man. Like,
cast a very old man.
Like, wouldn't you think you would cast the guy like at the age that he died? It just was really confusing. But either way, we get some baseball.
Couldn't get Idris Elba, you know?
Yeah. We get some, oh, that would be great. We get some Wade Boggs. It's a really fun episode. It's not one of my favorite episodes, but it's a step up from this. And I don't mean to slight this episode too much because we love Psych, but that'll be a nice change of pace, a little curveball at you.
And it's got one of Megan's favorite all-time Psych scenes in that episode. And something about Gus doing the worm in the Pelican outfit was and the beginning scene with Sean and Henry. I mean, you want to talk about all-time Henry moment. It's the opening. It's in the opening scene of next week's episode. So until next week, Willie. But first, Willie, I called you Willie.
Yeah, we're getting our strokes back here.
But yeah, it's well, where can the people find us?
They can find us anywhere you want. Specifically, if you want to find all the podcasts, all the podcasting apps, they are Mac and Goo Dork. We are part of the Dorkshire Gooniverse on Facebook. So check us out there. Then your other podcast, TLDR, the preeminent comic book podcast in the world. Your co-host, Dick Fryer, has another podcast, Change My Mind. I had a podcast. Now it's just a maybe yearly Scream podcast. We'll see what else we do. PCP, go check out the episodes in the archives. And I think that's it.
We're getting a SummerSlam episode from you too.
All right. I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get a little SummerSlam.
Thanks, Party of the Summer.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah, damn right it is. So until next week, William, wait for it.
Leroy Jenkins.
Frank says that.
I fucking love that. Yeah, it's tremendous. Every